Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
It's all about the weather this week on Commodity Week. It's all about the weather. It's all about the weather. It's all about the weather. Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Chip Flory, a pro farmer and Farm Journal electronic media. Our panelists today are Steve Schilling of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois, Wyatt Muse of the Andersons right here in Champaign County, and Mike Georgia of Allendale out of Mahomet, Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's open today's discussion with this question. Does it bother you at all that December Corn Friday didn't make a run for the contract high at 429.5? It stopped at 425. That's the high for the week, by the way. And then it settled back for the day, just up 6.75, another 4.5 cents. Just didn't seem like that much to ask in these volatile times of the marketplace. So the question is, why didn't the trade make that push this past week?
I have a feeling we're waiting for this upcoming week to see if this next chance of rain materializes. And no, that does not worry me. I think there's probably a fair amount of profit taking on people that got long in the mid-360s to 370s, and they're ready to lighten up and readjust and see where they're at before this next potential rain comes through.
Wyatt Muse, of course, is with the Anderson. Steve Schilling of Strategic Farm Marketing.
Hey, it's Friday afternoon. It's a typical weekend. Everybody's concerned with what the weather will be next week, and I agree with Wyatt. I don't think it'll be any mountain to climb next week if this rain does not materialize.
And Mike Georgia of Allendale out of Mahomet.
I'll have to agree with everything they've just said. I mean, it depends on the rain, and it depends on when we get it and if we're going to get it.
Steve, last week we included in our WILL Ag newsletter a chart showing the state of Illinois monthly average cash corn prices since 1960. That came off the FarmDoc website. They haven't been at these levels, right at $4, but a few times on a monthly average, just one period during the last 47 years. Those were 3 months in a row back in the big 90s climb. Does this tell you, taking into the crop insurance coverage into account, anything about what farmers should do on the cash side of the ledger? So with the crop insurance and $4 cash corn, do they really need to do anything?
Well, I think a lot of them have already committed to pricing corn. When it was 375, 380, it looked awful attractive. So there's a certain percentage of it's already sold, whether it be hedged or arrives cash or whatever means they're comfortable with. So at this point in time, I think typical weather markets, some of us are a little older than other people that have lived through them before, these things can really explode on you. So at this point in time, sit back and see what the weather does.
Well, I think that's right. But I think you also have to figure out that you have cash corn at $4 and you don't know what the weather is going to be like. So you have to price what you've got insured and make some moves in the market, not wait, because the market could be volatile to the downside.
That's exactly right. And also, Todd, you mentioned the dates going back into the 60s it was on the cash prices, and we made history this past Tuesday with every month trading closing above $4. First time that's ever happened. So right now we are in new territory, and anyone that has sold corn below the market today can't be kicking themselves now, because our inputs are locked in for this year and it's still profitable. Now next year may be a different story with inputs rising, but For now, don't be kicking yourself over sales that are below the market. Reminder, we're within 5 cents of contract highs.
Steve, Informa came out with a set of numbers this week. Can you tell us about those?
They just came out with an updated acreage projection from the Informa, the old Sparks group. On corn, they came up with a 90.724. The government used 90.5, which is a minimal change, about 0.14%. In the beans, a little surprise maybe here, 68.770. The government's been using 67.1. That was about 3.7% higher than the last government report. Spring wheat, it's basically unchanged at 13.958, and the cotton was down about 3.22% at 5.17 acres. So nothing real unexpected there. Again, beans maybe up just a nickel more. And I think maybe a lot of people in the trade do expect bigger corn numbers, and we'll just have to wait and see when they come out in June 29.
I'm with Steve on this one. And aside from that, I don't know that the Informa numbers are the leader today. I think the weather is more important.
Exactly.
If we cut this crop, the added acres aren't going to matter nearly as much. Just kind of looking in perspective here, if we take the national yield all the way down to, say, a 140 number and our demand holds on, that's going to cut our carryout next year basically to zero.
Let's bring wheat into this discussion, and we'll take a look at those numbers futures in the wheat pit. Actually, I don't have the numbers with me, but we'll get them in just a second. When we take a look at wheat, it rallied to contract highs this week and topped just above $6. A couple of quick questions. What does this mean to the soft red farmers? Should they go ahead and make their cash sales now to begin with?
Well, I think, you know, the cash sales is what everybody's trying to decide, but the way the weather is, the way the yields are coming in, they're not going to make cash sales. I mean, you still think there's some upside here, but the possibility of a drastic downside. Japan didn't buy as much wheat this week as they were supposed to. There's going to, you know, you're going to see some rationing maybe starting. So I think if you haven't got it priced at all, you definitely got to start.
And should they go ahead and price out cash wheat?
Well, I think I agree. At this point in time, again, we're in this big thing called a weather market, and we're going to digest the $6 wheat for a few days. And we were tremendously overbought from a technical point of view, and we were due for a setback and really didn't get that big a one. I think you need to kind of keep monitoring this hard red wheat out west, where they're having all kinds of problems as far as quality issues. Are they going to be able to get it harvested? And I really think the hard red wheat ought to be the leader, but it seems like all the trade's focused in Chicago and that all the eyes are on soft wheat.
You know, speaking of Chicago, maybe we better give those numbers for the wheat. They finished like this week, like this. The July contract at a high this week is 619 and a quarter. They're low at $5.33 and a half. Their settlement price up 49 cents for the July wheat at 606 and a half. December wheat at 622. We're up 65 and a half. By the way, July corn at 423 and a half top this week. The low at 387 and a half. Their settlement price was 37 cents. Higher at $4.19, and December futures week to week $4.24 and a quarter to the settlement on Friday afternoon, and that was 32 cents above the previous Friday afternoon settlement price. Number two question on the wheat: how does the potential top in the wheat market, if that's the case, and I'm not saying that it is, but we're up at high levels, playing into Indy decisions about marketing both corn and wheat?
Well, I think one thing to note on the higher end of the wheat, we did fill a gap this week that was made on the continuous wheat chart back in 96 on the way down, and after that we really haven't seen any activity both today and last night's trade. One thing to be watching very closely on the wheat market, and I'd probably lock it in if possible, is the basis levels. Our basis has faded a dime this week, and we're still able to buy wheat and champagne coming all the way from Havana, Illinois, and I've seen it as far south as Palestine, Illinois. So we're drawing from a great distance just because the wheat basis is terrible there. This is a showstopper for the processor with the board run up, with the speculators just running this out of control, and there's still quite a good amount of soft red wheat in the countryside right now today. Not saying we can't run out in the next year or so, but my bias is make cash sales. The wheat's a gift. The price of the wheat is a gift right now. If you really want to be bullish wheat, sell it across the scales and re-own it on the board, because I see no good news in sight for wheat basis. And with a 560 cash price today, I think it's great.
If wheat fails, will corn follow?
Not necessarily. I think it's got a story in of its own because you saw the corn run up this week. The wheat obviously ran up more, but wheat can fail as a feedstuff, and corn can still hang on based on its energy value.
You were shaking your head on that one, that no, corn wouldn't fail if wheat did.
Well, I think eventually, you know, again, we're just basically in a weather market in this corn. Obviously, that's what's run the wheat, and they've been king for so long. But eventually, corn may take over here, and again, it just depends on the weather. So we're all interested in hearing what the weather forecast is here pretty soon.
From the Soy Complex, July beans this week, 848 and three quarters, the high, the low at 815. Settlement price, they were up 25 and three quarters at 847 and a quarter. November beans, 880 and three quarters, were up 26 and a quarter from last week. Soybeans sure looked like an underperformer for the week, given the gains in the corn and the wheat. Is it all the cap that was put on the palm oil markets last week, do you think?
Well, the palm oil market made a big difference, but I also think that you're looking at – people are talking about the lower ending stocks, even though they're not tremendously low, the lower bean yields. So they're really concerned just as well with the beans as corn. I mean, they're worried with lower ending stocks and lower yields, and that's going to make a difference to hold the beans up.
I have to agree with Mike there, and yes, I do think the increased margins on the palm oil probably did hurt the soy complex. We might have already reached that $9 mark versus, you know, being $8.80 today, say, on the November, had that not happened. But as you saw today, being up 20 cents, that certainly didn't hurt it. One thing that's really interesting playing into the beans right now, there was such a great prospect for a lot of double crop beans to go in after this wheat that was originally planted. And a lot of the wheat being ripped up and replaced with corn is going to kill that. And also, it's going to be difficult to put beans in such dry soil with no moisture in sight today if you don't have any irrigation to put on it, which right around here we don't. But it'll be interesting to see what the double crop bean prospects come out to be.
What are your feelings about the southern soybean growing regions? They've been in a very heavy drought situation there for quite some time now. In fact, the drought monitors show a good portion of that area in the southeast in extreme drought. How much of an impact might that have, if any?
Well, I think the beans can recover if they start getting rain. I think down in the south, a lot of acres that were cotton, a lot of acres in the past years have been beans. That's where some of our increased corn acres came from. That's what's probably going to be the first telltale sign is the reduction in corn production from that area, which has got to affect our overall yield for the corn in the United States instead of the 150, whatever you want to use, trend lines 152.3. I'm not sure we can overcome with the extra acres down there the reduced yield that they're obviously going to see.
You agree with him?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we need to give John Bondurant a call here next week. I know he said he was going to plant quite a few soybeans and like to see how his crop's doing. He's right in the midst of that drought area.
Taking a look at the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange now. June live cattle a 90.90 top for the week, low at 89.55. Their settlement price at 90.55. We're up 82.5 from last week. August feeder cattle at 106.95. We're down 125 from the week previous. July lean hogs are new lead at 76.97.5 on their high. Their low over at the Merc at 72.60. A settlement price at 76.45, up $4.10. And July bellies at 98.45, were up 3.15. One other note, July oats at 292 settled unchanged. Steve, anything in the livestock marketplace that we really need to keep track of for the cattle or the hogs, either one, on pricing out their inputs?
Well, I'm not so sure about the inputs. I think one thing to keep an eye on is if you remember last year, the drought was in Texas, Oklahoma, down in the southwest. A lot of cows went to market from that area last year because they just didn't have any feed. The southeast flourished as far as their cows because they had green grass all summer. Well, just the reverse is true this year. So we're seeing an increase in cow kill coming from that area this year. So combining the 2 years, it looks to me like we're losing a lot of cows, and it takes a long time to replace a cow in the factory for feeder calves.
In 2 minutes, we'll talk with Chip Flory of Pro Farmer.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. It was another dry and comfortably warm week across the state of Illinois. Clear skies and low dew points made for comfortable weather across Illinois as high pressure remained entrenched over the central United States. That resulted in rainfall, though, adding up to big goose eggs across most of Illinois this week at a time of year when we should be averaging about an inch a week. A few isolated showers and thundershowers developed in southeastern Illinois on Thursday as a weak upper wave passed into Illinois, but they were few and far between. Temperatures this week range from near normal over southern Illinois to 2 to 3 degrees above normal in the north. High temperatures rose a degree or two each day this week, finally approaching or topping 90 degrees in many areas on Wednesday. The third week of June looks to be much the same as this past week. However, it appears there will be two chances for rain across Illinois next week. The first will be on Tuesday as a weak cold front pushes through the state. The second will come with another frontal passage at the end of the week. It appears that while the potential for rain will exist, coverage is likely to be spotty and amounts generally light. The potential for heavier rain appears to be limited to northern Illinois. Temperatures next week will average near normal. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to Commodity Week. This is WILL AM 580. You can hear the programming at willag.org. Our panelists today in studio are Wyatt Muse of the Andersons in Champaign County, Mike Georgie of Allendale out of Mahomet, Illinois, and Steve Schilling of Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. Joining us now is Chip Flory. He's the director at Professional Farmers of America. He joined Pro Farmer staff in 1991. His specialty is anticipating the impact of major developments in supply and demand prospects on market psychology and price trends. You can read some of what Chip has to say on a daily basis, like I do, at www.agweb.com. Chip, thanks for joining us today.
You bet, Todd.
Hey, I happen to have AgWeb bookmarked. Okay, I'll admit it. AgWeb's my homepage, but that's only because I already know what's on willag.org. Anyway, I want to hear about your question of the week on trend yields, and then I'll follow up.
Okay, yeah. The bottom line, every I shouldn't say every comment, but I've probably got 50, 60 emails in on that already, I could count on one hand the number of emails that say, yeah, we could still hit a trend line yield, national average trend line yield on corn. Everybody else is listing all kinds of reasons why they think their yields are going to be off. I'm a little hesitant to get too excited or too worked up about the potential yield drag over in the Eastern Corn Belt. I know it's dry. I've seen some of it. I know we're putting some stress on that crop, but I still think that if we could get some of those rains to sneak into some key areas next week, we're going to see that crop recover pretty quickly. But everybody seems to be looking at the Western Belt and just assuming that we're going to see some good yields come out of that Western Belt. We've dealt with a lot of rain over here. It's actually a little bit further west than what I am, but there's been a lot of rain in the area, and Council Bluffs area, for example, fell just a half inch short of getting a record rainfall for May. And that makes it look just like 1993 down there. There's lots of ponding, and we've lost lots of fertilizer down deep, and we've got flat roots, and the root system isn't going down to tap down into the fertilizer and nitrogen and so on. So that crop really looks pretty rough over there. But the thing that concerns me the most about this Western crop is, over the last few years, or last couple of years, guys are planting 32,000 and getting as much as 30,500 plants out there, maybe even 31,000 plants out there. This year, the guys that planted 32,000 have got maybe 29 or 29.5. So that right there is plain and simple irreversible yield damage. Those plants aren't going to come anymore. Over in the Eastern Belt, like I was saying, we sneak some rains in there this next week, and I know the odds aren't really, really good for it, but there is a chance, and I think we're gonna get back a lot of that yield potential if that would happen. Now, if at this time next week we're talking, that corn crop is going to go through some pretty critical development stages, and as a result of that, I think then we can start talking about knocking at least the top end off that yield over there.
You know, as I was looking at, I was thinking about this question on trend yield, and most of the farmers that you've gotten emails from, and I was reading a number of them, think that they won't make trend yield,
right,
of course. But is it really a fair question in a year with so many extra corn acres out there? You would think that trend yield would be down across the board anyway.
Well, that's one of the reasons I was asking the question, Todd. You know, I wanted to get enough responses in here and then kind of drop the bomb on them that, hey, you know, we're trend line yields really realistic anyway. Get them thinking about it. And that's one of the reasons that on this on the front page of this week's Pro Farmer, I've got a picture of a corn on corn field from Piatt County over there. And, you know, the corn's rolled up pretty good. It's showing quite a bit of stress. And it was a no-till corn on corn field, which I think is probably the worst case situation over there this year. And
Piatt County or the corn on corn?
Yeah. And, well, the corn on corn, and especially if it's no-till corn on corn, that combination seems to be really tough.
My apologies
and,
to producers in Piatt County.
Yeah. As a result of that, you know, I think we are looking at a situation where it was going to be exceptionally difficult to get to trend line yield anyway. We haven't been there for a couple of years, and this year is definitely not like we saw in 2005 or 2006. Now, you know, understanding that 2005, you guys went through a pretty rough season yourself.
Well, you know, with the trend line yields being the question, you know, do you think we have the acres, even if they go up to a 90.7 or something, and we've had a lot of ponding and a lot of acres out there that have gone around ponds to plant, and corn on corn being a problem as well. With these weather conditions, is it going to be a problem getting your trend line yield because of the corn on corn and the dryness?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I really think so. You know, we back in October, we plugged in 153 bushels per acre national average yield. We're still sitting at 153 bushels, but we're ready to start moving that down. We're starting to get enough evidence in here on stand counts and the nitrogen leaching and some of the other problems and the stress in the eastern belt and so on that we're really, really close to start inching that our yield expectations down. You know, the way things look right now, if we do 150 bushels per acre, I think things would have to turn out darn near perfect from this point forward for us, for the country, to get to 150 bushel.
Quick question on the new technology we have, mm-hmm, with the triple stack and so, mm-hmm, on and so forth. Can we gauge that and plug that in? Obviously, there's a lot more of that, a higher percentage. Will that affect trend line yields at all this year?
Oh, I think it will. You know, the one thing about a corn plant, you know, doing 14, 15 years of the crop tour, we've noticed how that plant stays healthy deep into the year. Before we got even BT corn, on the first generation genetically modified crops, you know, we'd get into that third week of August, and it was not unusual to see cornfields turning brown at that time. You know, since BT came along, the plant health improved dramatically, and once the rootworm protection got in place, my goodness, that plant is solid green. The husk may be starting to turn white in the third week of August, but you've still got a plant that is so healthy and still capturing energy and pumping that energy into a heavier kernel. So the plant health and the impact of technology on the plant health, there is no denying, in my mind anyway, that if you can keep that plant healthy deep into the year and give it a shot of water at a saving time, that crop's going to do a lot better than what you figured just before the rain fell.
Shifting gears a little bit, Chip, you're talking about some areas are already rough. Can you see the transportation becoming a problem in the upcoming year if we have some areas that have excessive amounts of corn piled on the ground in other areas of the country with empty bins?
You bet. You know, I'm looking at, well, the first thing they need to talk about is the southeast and all the acres that they added down there, and they just simply don't have any storage for it. So that's your first impact on it. We're within a month of harvesting crops out of Mississippi and Louisiana, and they don't have any storage for corn, or very little, I should say. So that stuff's going to roll straight to the Gulf. So, yeah, you know, the storage and the transportation issues, I think, definitely are going to have an impact on the cash market. Now, when you get up here into the Midwest, the basis strength that we've seen, I know it softened a little bit over the last week, and it seems like we got a little bit of strength back into it yesterday, but that little bit of basis weakness, but the strength that we're seeing right now is a great opportunity, I think, because once we get to this fall, even if the guys are averaging, say, you know, no better than a 5-year average on their corn yields, we're still going to have a transportation problem. We put up a lot of bins. There's grain storage in the Midwest has increased dramatically over the last couple of years. But still, we're going to have a lot of corn that has to move in a hurry. So we're going to see some piles, and I anticipate some early harvest season pressure on that basis, and basis could really, really stink during this harvest season, because there's going to be plenty of corn around no matter what.
Speaking of the basis and the Gulf levels, is it possible that the Gulf basis is bad because there's a understanding that they're going to get a lot of corn out of the southern part of the U.S.?
Absolutely, and they know there's no storage down there. They know that stuff is coming within 40 days now, really. It's going to start to move in there. So I think they're into a waiting mode. I don't think they're in too big of a hurry to get real aggressive and move more corn at this point. I think they're sitting here with a carryover projection or estimate for the old crop under a billion bushels, and kind of have the attitude that if we push this corn out the door too fast, it's just going to drive the market that much higher and shut off demand completely for months to come. So I think they do want to back off on their export pace down there at the Gulf a little bit, and I think they want to keep their demand base in place for as long as they possibly can. Now, if the current weather pattern continues and it turns into a significant problem for the Corn Belt, then all bets are off. Then Japan's going to come knocking, and South Korea is going to come knocking, and they're going to want to get as much corn booked as they possibly can, as fast as they can, and that's when that Gulf basis should pop. So, you know, we've got to keep our eye on it, but I think they want to slow down that export pace just a little bit and keep carryover at least around that billion bushel level.
And maybe 15 or 20 seconds on cash basis for soybeans, which has just been lousy.
And it will remain just lousy. I don't see any reason for it to firm up. You know, you look at that bean chart in futures, and it has just been absolutely remarkable, the gains that we've been putting in there, and the way that we've done it has just been spectacular. Out to the new highs this week, and the bean chart just looks rock solid, and basis, I think, is going to continue to stink.
We appreciate you being with us.
Hey, you bet, Todd.
Yep, Chip Flory is with Pro Farmer, and he is out of Iowa. Now a final word from our panelist in studio, and we'll start with you, Wyatt Mews.
Well, I know everyone will be watching their crops every day. Just make sure to keep a watch on the market, and if you need to take any action, don't hesitate to give us a call.
And Wyatt Mews, of course, is with the Andersons here in Champaign County. Steve Schilling of Strategic Farm Marketing.
Well, I think the key word is rain. Send some rain over here to East Central Illinois so our pineapple fields start looking like cornfields again.
And Mike Georgie of Allendale.
I have to repeat what everybody said. Weather, weather, weather. The market goes up, but it comes down just as fast. So keep an eye on it.
That's Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.